It's Reese on the radio.
And don't say we didn't warn you. On News Talk 1080, WTIC.
We'll get back to Rudy in a second, but I got to do this.
Between rounds.
And congratulations to our Between Rounds winner, David B. of Don't Drink the Waterbury. He is our winner of a dozen bagels a month for 6 months, courtesy of Between Rounds, the Bagel Bakery and Sandwich Cafe, located in South Windsor, Vernon, and Manchester. That's it. If you want to win, if you'd like an opportunity to win, you got to go to reeseontheradio.com. That's R-E-E-S-E on the radio.com. In order to enter, get all of your name, your info, your telephone number, your birthday. Get that in there in a little fill-out form. Please do not forget those things. You must not live outside of Connecticut, and you must not have won within the last 6 months of today in order to participate, if not win. Again, that's reeseontheradio.com. That's R-E-E-S-E on the radio.com, so you can participate and win Between Rounds, the dozen bagels a month for 6 months. We'll get into, we'll get back to Rudy, in a bit. But yeah, this story about the whites only, and of course the attack on the white, a couple in Cincinnati. And of course, this now conversation about Sydney Sweeney and her jeans, is bringing race back into the fold. All of this is going to fall flat, folks. But you know what? It's been a long time since they've had something racial to be upset about. Now they have it. But this one's going to, all this stuff is weak sauce. Well, let's get back to some weather and traffic while everybody's starting to head home. Jason Katerina is going to tell you how hot it is. It is hot. And Mark Christopher is going to tell you whether or not you're going to bake in your car in the traffic, in the BPS traffic center. Hey, Mark. Who's not there yet? Oh, he's about to be there. I hope he's not baking in the car. Mark, you there? We'll give him a sec. I could just... Maybe I had to run real quick and grab some water because of all of the scorching heat out there. It's okay. Usually he just jumps in to say, hey, I'm here.
President of the Chris Murphy Fan Club, Reese on the Radio, on News Talk 1080, WTIC. WTIC.
Let's go back to the phones. I promise, Rudy, we bring them back. What's going on, sir? What was the last thing you wanted to ask?
So I'm going to try to combine these two things. I thought about it because you...
Sir?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah. So, okay, you thought about them. What were the two things?
Well, while you get one on the break, I think I condensed it perfectly to combine white only and the Cincinnati thing.
Okay.
And just a premise, you've lived in New England and New York, and New York's very similar to Chicago. I grew up in Chicago, spent time in New England. Now I'm in Florida. Chicago's very diverse, biracial neighborhoods.
Sure.
You can date whoever you want. And then I had my experience in New England, which I'll get into, that relates to white only. And now I'm in Florida, and everyone thinks the South is racist. But I'm in a redneck Republican white city and county, but my neighborhoods are diverse. So you got two types of black people mainly, and you got multiple types of white people.
Okay.
And what I mean by that is you got the people in Cincinnati stabbing the white people. Now,
I'm missing something, but go ahead. I apologize. You need to explain further.
That's the type of black person that Chris Rock tried to describe, and everyone should go see this on YouTube.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No, we're clear.
Where he goes, you haven't gone to jail? You're not supposed to go to jail.
Right.
What do you mean you pay child support? You're supposed to pay child support.
Right.
Those are the people that don't live up to their responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll take the second greatest black man since Chris Rock, Martin Luther King. You're supposed to live by merit. You're supposed to live by merit and content. And those are people like you who get on the radio every day, try to give 100%, try to be professional, has nothing to do with your race.
Nothing.
You want to do the best job you can. I have a woman where I live named Zelda. She is the CFO. of the largest credit union in Florida, the 10th largest credit union in the country. And she's a black woman, and she's one of the smartest people I ever met. And she blows the average white woman professional out of the water with her class and intelligence. So those are those people. And then I can take my New England experience, which you experienced, because you are at WRKO, right?
Yeah.
So I dealt with Dorchester and Southie.
Oh, yeah.
The Irish Catholic Democrats that would not let black people in. It was...
That's right.
It was never publicly announced that it's an all-white inclusive neighborhood, mm-hmm. but it was. The Italians in North End did the same thing. They still do it.
Oh, yeah, it's still very prominent there.
Right. Reese, if you married Beyonce and moved to Simsbury right now, you'd be the black family in the neighborhood. It still exists in New England. It does not exist in the majority of the rest of the country.
But wait a minute, hold on. There's a deeper context that I think you're saying, but not.
There's a real deep context.
Wait, hold on.
Because you want to go.
Because I think what you're saying is something that I've said for a lot of years back in the days, and this is off air. But I think I think I've kind of said it here on the air. That in the unlikeliest of places in the Northeast that are supposed to be incredibly liberal, there's more of the non-inclusive neighborhoods like Southie. Like Massachusetts Democrat state, but they have some of the biggest
prejudice.
A Democrat
town like West Hartford, and there's a no hate, no home here, that means they want to build housing projects in Middlefield and Middletown to get black people and Hispanic people houses, but don't do it in my neighborhood because
exactly.
I don't want you.
Exactly. No, you're making the exact point I'm making.
That is why I keep saying that there's like multiple levels of white people with their racism, and mm-hmm. but it's so predominantly in the Northeast.
Yes.
With white liberal.
Yes.
And often Catholics.
You know what's crazy? I said that was the first time in my life I had ever experienced. I had been to the South, and then I went to Buffalo, New York, in the 1990s, not late 80s, early 90s. And I was going, I've never been treated like this in the South that everyone told me I was supposed to be fearful of, Mississippi, Alabama. I get to Buffalo, New York, and people had said some of the most offensive things about my race that I couldn't even imagine. And I'm going, wait a minute, this is New York.
Reese, so the last two things, like you in the Northeast.
Yeah.
You have a white wife, right?
No, my wife's Mexican. But I've been married often white.
Your son's mother's white, right?
Yes.
So you have a biracial son. Your ex-wife is white. In Boston, you'd be homeless because the blacks don't want you because you're Carlton. And the whites don't want you because you're Uncle Tom because they're all racist Democrats. In the South, nobody would care where I live.
Oh, it's
and
over.
In Chicago,
I couldn't believe it.
When
I went to Memphis, and I had seen a concentration of mixed interracial relationships in Memphis in 1996 that I couldn't even find or was frowned upon in the Northeast. It was incredible to me.
Polk County, Florida sits 32 miles from downtown Tampa and 48 miles from Disneyland. It votes 68% Republican. It's about 68% white.
Wow.
What do you think we see more often? A black woman with a white husband or a white woman with a black husband?
Probably the latter.
No, we see more black women with white husbands.
Oh, really? Oh,
About 4-1.
Damn. It's incredible, but you know what?
There's such a strong black middle class in Central Florida. I'm not saying this exists in Miami or Jacksonville.
Sure.
But when you get out to like the middle class areas, the population is 18% black here. And if you get out of the urban inner cities, the black population that's 18% is like college educated professional, like Zelda that I talked about.
Yeah. It's interesting.
It's a different world.
Yeah.
And the neighborhoods aren't segregated. I mean, I lived in Middlefield, Connecticut. I remember I ran the census numbers in 2018. There was like five black people, three Asian people, and two Hispanics in a town of 2,500 people. Like, I mean, that's what Connecticut is.
Well, it's a, the numbers have changed dramatically in the last 20 years. There was a poll, there was an actual, some data that just came out recently where those numbers, now if you were to look at them, you wouldn't even recognize some of these towns. We're talking about numbers.
The bottom line is there's a silent white inclusiveness.
Yes.
And it's mainly in the Northeast, in New York, New England, New Jersey.
You're 100% right. Thank you, Rudy. Let me grab some others here. Thanks, boss. Let's go to Aaron in Goshen real quick. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, so I'll just piggyback on that a little bit. He kind of was making some points that I was going to make. Yeah, I like to call him the closet racist of New England. There's plenty of them. It's like, oh, not in my neighborhood. Prime example. And I will say this: Democrats are the most racist people on the face of the planet. Way more. Like they call Republicans racist. Not even close. Democrats put themselves on a pedestal and look down on the African American community as being unable to do normal tasks that they can do easily. Like, oh, they can't get an ID to vote. That's racism because they're not smart enough. Let's help them out. Let's do this to equalize the playing field because they're not equal to us. It's the most disgusting thing ever, and they get away with it. Where when you're a Republican, you're like, all right, you want to be equal? You're equal. There you go.
Well, you have to remember that. You have to remember, like, the preface of all of that, Aaron, is the compassion, right? The compassion shields the bigotry. That's exactly how it works. It's almost like, you know, like putting your right hand in front of your left hand, and the right hand that you're showing shows compassion while your bigotry sits in the background. Because all you're saying to yourself is like, look, I'm not saying that you're less than us. I'm just saying that you don't have the same opportunities as us. That's why you need the help. And then when you hear it, it's like, yeah, we need help. And then you keep repeating that mantra over and over again. After a while, people start becoming very sycophantic to that ideal. I've talked to more people in my lifetime who are black who have repeated the same nonsense that's promoted by this. And I was like, well, you know, we don't have that many opportunities. I was like, who told you that? I'm going, well, you don't. I'm like, how do you know those things? And they would go, well, that's just commonplace. I'm like, no, it's not commonplace. That's what you were led to believe. You were indoctrinated to believe that you are in this position. And I tried to put, but you can't push back on it, because if you push back on it, you are less compassionate. And that's the overarching theme to all of that you're talking about, is that having a difference of opinion in that mantra means you're not compassionate to their woes.
And go against them and then see what happens.
Yeah, you indeed.
If you get off the reservation, if you get off the plantation and start thinking for yourself, then see how they treat you.
Oh, exactly.
Then you're, they don't even know how to handle it.
I've never
heard the other thing I would say too,
guys, I'm sorry.
The overwhelming issue with, I would say, black America in our country right now is that we have a cultural disconnect.
Yes.
Essentially, we're running fatherless households and promoting that. We promote music that's all about shoot 'em up, sleep with as many women as you can, deal as many drugs as you can, make the money while you can. And that's promoted, and that's put on a pedestal.
Yeah, well, because everything else is being a square.
This criminal mentality.
Yeah, well, that's because you have to think about it on this side, Aaron. It's like everything else counter to that is being a square. I've made this argument over and over again. It's like, it's incredible that you cannot give away the idea of education to a community without it being smeared as trying to be white. Right? A matter of speech, right? I've got more people who tell me that my syntax is against what my skin color is, which then makes me abnormal and a square, right? So in essence, to ingratiate myself in the crowd, I have to either sound ignorant or have no grasp of the English language, which makes no sense to me when you're saying to me that in order to be, I guess, authentic in the black community, I have to diminish myself to its base, or it's absolute minuscule levels. And that's by design.
That's been designed since the 70s. Like that's been commonplace since
exactly.
The war on poverty started. That's been the design to keep people oppressed and keep them in that mentality where they're a victim. That victimhood mentality keeps them where they're at.
Yeah, exactly.
Once people figure that out, like you have, you can then step away from it and you can win.
Oh, yeah, but
is,
and then,
once
and
you
know
what learn happened? How to win, you don't have control.
And I always say that that's, you know, a key part of this, Aaron. And thank you for the call, man. I appreciate you. A key part of all of this is what I just said about the envy, right? So if you step out of that mindset, you're a sellout, right? And if you stay in that mindset, then you're authentic. Because it's not for you to step away and do for yourself. It's not for you to step away and actually do something that is productive in your own life, get an education or get a career or join some particular, whatever the case may be. That's not acceptable. But to sit and wallow in that constant victimhood, to sit and wallow in that constant, you know, we're always put down, or we're always going to be poor, or we're always going to be left behind, and the constant theme of screaming at those who do have and being a have not to scream at the haves, that is what's considered authentic. Doing for yourself, on the other hand, that's a sellout mentality. I've told people this, and I've told people in the black community over and over again, and I know they listen to this program, is that this idea that it's noble to be poor, noble to be uneducated, noble or authentic to be a victim, is only going to do you what it does for you today, constant frustration. And if you think that you're going to get me to join your side by, you know, the ridicule and all that, it's not, save it. I'm not jealous of anybody. I'm not. I'm not jealous of what anybody else has. I only care about what I have. And I want more. We got to take a break. We'll come back. More news, more views. And I got to announce in the guest who's going to be on the program tomorrow, another African-American Republican who's running in the 5th District. We'll talk about him in a bit when we get back. So stick around. It's more news, more views. It's we got to go to weather and traffic with Jason Caterina and Mark Christopher's in the BPS Traffic Center. And I think he's back now. He's good to go. Right, Mark?
Stay locked in. Locked in. Reese on the radio is on WTIC. News Talk 1080.
Getting back to your phone calls in a little bit. Stand by for that. 860-522-WTIC. 860-522-9842. We got plenty of other news and views to get into. Especially this Hartford, resistance that's going on the 31st. Apparently, it's happening at the Riverside Park pedestrian bridge. Folks, be careful at these things. If this gets a bunch of people on that bridge, please be careful. I would never get with a bunch of people to protest standing on a bridge. I just wouldn't, okay? Construction purposes. Please be careful if you're thinking about going to this thing. Just really, I'm just saying. I'm already afraid of heights. I would never, ever do it. Please be careful if you go in there. And I'm saying that to even liberals who want to fight against the regime. Please be careful. All right? You get too much weight on that thing, you know, please be careful. Also, tomorrow at 4:00, we're going to speak to community leader, youth mentor, and lifelong Connecticut resident. That's how he told me to introduce him. Jonathan DeBarros is going to be on the program. He's running to represent the 5th District against Joanna Hayes. So if you want to check that out, please do. At roughly about, we're going to see if we can talk to him for about an hour tomorrow about what he's doing. He just came back from the White House not too long ago. We'll talk about his visit there as well. So he's going to be joining us. A lot of people were telling me, he's like, yo, you need to get this guy on. So I reached out as soon as I got word, and we talked for a little bit. So he'll be on the program tomorrow. We'll all get to know him and see if we can help this guy out. So, again, that is Jonathan DeBarros. He's going to be on the program tomorrow at 4:00. Also coming up, there is this article about it's the Wall Street Journal poll numbers. There's some very, very interesting things that Chris Matthews said that I played earlier in the headlines, but there are some other polling data that needs to be discussed as well. So we'll get into that and so much more. Mamdani's got some controversy going on about this wedding event that happened in Uganda, which just, I actually believe this from the bottom of my heart. It may be the momentum is starting to shift against Mamdani. This distance between the primary and the election in November, that may be too much time for Mamdani to actually stay in the lead. We'll talk about that as well when we return. So stand by. Your phone calls, of course, are next on Reese on the Radio. Let's get some weather and traffic again with Jason Katarinas and Mark Christopher's in the BPS Traffic Center. Hey, Mark.
The self-proclaimed love child of Rush Limbaugh.
We're running a strange program, y'all.
Reese on the Radio on News Talk 1080 WTIC.
All right, let's go through the motions here. Anybody and everybody has got a comment. Let's go to White Mike in Florida. What's going on, sir?
Hey, man, so this Sydney Sweeney controversy has me kind of befuddled. Are these people trying to put 10 toes on the ground and tell me that she doesn't have good genes?
Which, again, even Roland said it earlier. It's like, she's got good genes. You can't deny it. I mean, whether you don't understand the double entendre or not, she's a beautiful woman.
I mean, good grief. Like, we all know there's some people who hit the genetic lottery. We see them. I mean, Chris Hemsworth exists. You know?
Yeah, exactly. I don't think, like I said, I think that this was one of those things where they thought they had their Bud Light moment, right? This is just sort of like an antithesis of the Dylan Mulvaney thing that protesters are trying to get American Eagle to face some sort of backlash. But I was like, look, they're dealing with an audience base, American Eagle is for that matter, is dealing with an audience base that will only further promote it because of Sydney Sweeney. Now guys will be buying those jeans for their girlfriends, and girls will be running to buy the jeans, which will only make them a powerhouse after the fact. Bud Light suffered, Target suffered, because they were catering to a base that doesn't purchase their products.
Well, and it's a really smart campaign, because the jeans they chose to put her in were kind of loose, like boyfriend jeans.
Yes.
So the average woman sees that, and she's not intimidated by Sydney Sweeney's perfect peach.
Right. Exactly. Which I thought was interesting that they didn't go the usual Beyonce or other gene route where they promote the rear end. They didn't do that. I was like, oh, she's wearing kind of loose fitting jeans. I was like, but it's it's tasteful and attractive.
And another thing about that community that wants to have, like, all white people or whatever in rural Ozarks, Missouri.
Yes.
Well, hey, you know, I'm still waiting for someone to show me an example.
I'm not going to lie. No, I can't even say it. Because Bill Clinton going to Harlem, it did improve Harlem. I'm not going
to. Dude, I gave my AI that question this weekend. I was like, hey, can you find me a place that, you know, the crime went down and GDP went up when it shifted from majority white to majority black? And AI came back and said, I got nothing for you, son.
Your AI would have exactly said that. Thank you, Mike.
No, yes, sir.
You got it. Let's go to Jim's in Waterbury. How are you, Jim?
Good. How are you?
Pretty good. What do you got?
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware of it, but there's this 100-year-old Iwo Jima veteran, Don Graves.
Okay.
He just cut a big record deal in Nashville. The man fought on, he was in the third wave on Iwo Jima, and he was on the flamethrower. He usually had a very short life expectancy.
Wow.
But he's got all his faculties mentally and physically, and he remembers all his experience, and he wrote a record with another fellow from Nashville, and Lee Greenwood flew him in from Michigan, and he sang it to him on his 100th birthday.
What's the name? The name of the artist again?
Well, the veteran's name is Don Graves, and Lee Greenwood sings. They flew him from Michigan to sing the song to him on his 100th birthday. But he tells all of his experience, and he promised God that if he got out of there, he'd serve him. Now, it took a few years till he got his act together, but he became a minister and served 36 years on the pulpit. But it's a really great story, because And he was saying after the battle was over, all the ships in the harbor were ringing bells, blowing their horns, cheering. But he tells his whole, the whole history of when he was on Iwo Jima.
I'm looking at it now. Is it Sands of Iwo Jima?
No, it's called Sand on Iwo Jima is the name of the song.
Okay, but well, okay, I've got, I think I've,
your,
I have.
You'll find it on your phone. Just look up "Veteran
literally,
Don Grave."
Literally have it right in front of me. It was the first thing that came up when I popped in his name. Thank you, Jim. We'll actually check it out.
Yeah, maybe you can get him on a show. Who knows?
Why not? I appreciate
you,
sir.
That'd be good. Take
Thank
care.
You,
have
sir.
A blessed day.
Thank you. You too. Let's go to Tommy. Tom's in Thomaston. How are you, sir?
Hey, I'm well, thanks. Yeah, I believe those guys with the flamethrowers were targeted. They had like a 12 or 20 minute life expectancy.
Wow.
Because the enemy, you know, one shot to those tanks and it just exploded.
Explode, yeah.
Yeah. So, Reese, I'm glad you're having that guy for the fifth in. But first,
okay.
I have a question. I'm almost positive you're going to answer, you know, the answer. I just found out about this guy when I saw a YouTube video of him. Do you know who the white James Brown was?
Ooh, no.
Oh, no?
No.
Wait, have you ever heard of Wayne Cochran?
Okay.
Okay.
He was in the group the CC Riders. I saw the video. He sang the Harlem Shuffle, and I swear to God, Reese, I swear Michael Jackson had to be influenced by this guy because he like did a moonwalk on one foot. It was insane. And he sang just like James Brown. And they called him, I guess, the white godfather or the white James Brown.
I'm looking him up now. He's literally sitting in front of me.
Are you looking at that big head of white
hair? The bouffant hairdo. My goodness. This guy, he almost looks like a character, like an over-exaggerated white version of James Brown. Now I have to watch this.
Yeah. Or he looks like the Beavis and Butthead hairdo, right?
Yes.
But listen to his song. He's a good singer. I never heard of him. Never.
I'm going to check him out now. I promise. I'll do that during the commercial break. Thank you, boss.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the guy for the fifth. I just heard a minute of him on another show once a week or so ago.
Uh-huh.
He's got have you ever heard of him? He's got a lot of ideas, just like you, Reese.
He
sounds
does.
Really good.
I've gone over everything that the guy's ever produced, like in the last day or so.
And I was like, wow, this is Reese running for office. Hey, speaking of the 5th District. Are you thinking at all of maybe moving into the 5th District area?
I had thought of that. I had Avon was one of the places that were on the...
Go north. Go Torrington and north. You don't want Avon or Canton.
Okay.
Go Torrington and north.
I will definitely consider some places. It's not going to happen immediately, but like I'm going to stay temporarily immediately in Farmington, in the Farmington region, and then I'm going to start expanding into where I'm going to live.
Good.
But I will definitely take care of it. Thank you, Tom. Let's go one more. I'm going to take, let's take Dan calling in Connecticut. How are you, Dan?
Good. How you doing today?
What's up, sir?
Hey, I just want you one of these days to do a show. I want you to look back and see where the insanity of the transgender movement kind of started. And in my opinion, I think it started with Rachel Dolezal when the black community didn't completely come out and riot against her for being a white Irish girl who thought she was black.
Okay. You
being
bring
trans
up a...
black.
You bring up a very, very good point in our history.
It kept going where the trans everything community from that, I think that was the nexus of, she was trans black and nobody went crazy.
Let me explain to you why you're pulling the right thread on this thing. That, I would always say that was what we call the test launch of being trans anything. And what was really, really crazy about it was
this idea that the reason why Rachel Dolezal could not be admonished, because she started to, you may bring a very good point, when it was revealed that Rachel Dolezal was indeed white, there were some outlets like Ebony and, Essence magazine. These black magazines were actually doing negative articles about her. But then something switched. And someone started suggesting that Rachel Dolezal's, want to need to be identified as black was a positive thing. And then the scrutiny sort of laid off, right? It's sort of like a little bit of it died out. Then she was universally accepted everywhere in black communities. And I think that you're on the right track because Sean Luther King, which that's why I called him, his name is Sean King, but Sean Luther King, who wrote for the New York Daily News, he was the other one that turned out that he was identifying as black. And these were good things that white folks who had grown up white were identifying with African Americans. And this was a net positive for African Americans sort of, you know, screaming their grievance that they had white sympathizers, which goes right back into my, that's what every movement needs, is the antithesis to show sympathy and then you protect them. So they get that protection. But I think you're on the right track that that may be the beginning. But what really happened with the transgender movement and why it's there, I'm sure that that played a role, but I think there was something bigger in all of that as to why it was
probably
allowed. And I'm not sure exactly if it's universally accepted for that reason, but I don't know. I just think that there's a little bit of that, but I think Rachel Dolezal was definitely a nexus.
Yeah. And this new promotion, though, it's in her genes. I think that should be taken seriously. It should be, right, it's in your genes.
Right.
That's where you go to the bathroom. You got it, you go there, you got the other, you go there.
That's a great point, Dan. It is in your genes, whether you're male or female, it's in your genes.
maybe that's what they're trying to get at. You know,
maybe that's what they're trying to push back on. It's a good point.
Because in both sets of your genes, you have XXXY chromosomes.
That's right.
And you have something put in your genes that says you're male or female. So maybe somebody's doing a subliminal little thing there to try to get people to wake up a little bit.
Good point. Thank you, Dan. Much appreciated.
Yeah. That's good day.
You got it. That's a really, really good angle. I actually like that angle. Yeah, but like I said, this is one of those things where you never know what you're getting into until you get into it. So you get one guy who goes viral or one girl who goes viral on protesting this thing. And then it gets all the attention that sort of certifies what you believe, right? Everyone's like, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. I'm going to share this with my friends. And then it grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. And the intended audience, they all get it. So then the news media, they look at it and they go, hey, this subject is starting to see a swell. Let's promote it on our outlets. So they start. And then the other side sees it. And then they go, hey, who are they talking about? Sydney Sweeney, I like that girl. Oh, what's this controversy? Oh, they have a problem with it. Okay. That's how the Chick-fil-A thing started. That's how it started. They turned around and said, oh, you know what? We're going to turn this into a protest. And then turned around, people said, protesting Chick-fil-A? I love that place. Nah. And then they counter it. So sometimes things get too big for their britches and it has to get chopped down. That's why I'm telling you, this Sydney Sweeney thing, it got too big and out of the control of the people who are trying to turn it into something. So it's going to backfire. I doubt this is going to hurt American Eagle. I truly do. I doubt it will ever hurt them. People are going to jump on this like crazy. When we come back, I got to play this audio from Harry Enten. Now, think about this. We're being told that Donald Trump is underwater everywhere and that the midterms are at stake. But these polling numbers that are coming out of the Wall Street Journal, paint a completely different story. And they've prompted the likes of Chris Matthews, formerly of NBC, to say this, something he would never say on NBC, Morning Joke, or any one of those programs. He said this on a podcast with Charlie Rose, formerly of CBS News. He got Me Too'd. Here's what he said about Donald Trump.
To be honest with you, the country is moving towards Trump. I mean, these polls that come out and show him not doing well, I don't buy that.
Say,
I think his strength is still greater than the Democratic strength. He is a stronger public figure than the Democratic people. I mean, Obama still has tremendous charisma, but Trump has strength. And I think that's what all voters look for. But they want a president who is a strong figure. And he's got it. And he can, you know, it's just there. And half the country buys it.
He's right. That number is growing, and it's going to grow even further. So, you know, I just asked one simple question. I thought about this the other night. Democrats, what's your policy on anything? Anything on improving the lives of Americans? Can you say it without using the term health care for all? Like, what's your policy? Anything. Just name it. You can't come up with nothing. It's nothing. Anyway, we'll take a break. More news, more views when we come back. And more of this audio. Let's get to Jason Catarina with weather and Mark Christmas at the BPS Traffic Center. How are we doing, sir?